The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome Larry and Linda Benson, who served in Santiago, Chile, as humanitarian area welfare specialists. Welcome. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about Brother and Sister Benson. Where are you from? What did you do for a living before you took this step? Was this your first mission?
Well, it's our first full-time mission.
Okay.
Yes, we had service missions, temple work, and other things prior to this.
Okay. Brother Benson, let me ask Sister Benson, family, children, grandchildren, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
We have 9 children. The oldest lives in Spokane, Washington. The youngest is just leaving Texas, and the rest live very close to us in Utah. We have 41 grandchildren, 40 living.
Wow. Have you ever gotten them together, everybody together in one place?
No, because the last time we were all together, our oldest grandson was on a mission, and now our second grandson just left yesterday on a mission. So,
and he's going where?
He's going to Mexico City.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if we'll ever be together. Totally.
That's a big family. Brother Benson, how did you earn a living throughout your life here?
Well, most of my years were spent at the BYU Library, where I served in various capacities, various departments, taught a little bit in the library school.
Very interesting. Did you always think you'd go on a mission, or is this something that, how did this kind of come about?
Well, we had served service missionaries and so forth, and for quite a while before we left, I had been thinking that, you know, we still have good health and we're financially able. Maybe we ought to do it while these things are in place.
Did you have a choice where you wanted to go? Did you have something in mind, Sister Benson, where you perhaps would like to serve?
We didn't put down anything on our papers. We said we'd go wherever. As Larry said, we were serving. I was spending probably 35 hours a week in the service mission and in the temple and doing family history and indexing. I didn't really feel the need like we were, and yet at the same time, we always in the back of our minds thought that someday we would serve a mission. And our bishop wanted us to go, our stake president wanted us to go, some of our children were saying, when are you going on your mission? And it just, then circumstances happened that it just felt right, like it was the time to go.
Now you go through the process and get the call, get the envelope. Did you have children around when you opened it, or was it
a
personal thing between the two of you? Tell me a little bit about that day.
Well, that day when I opened that, I was very stunned because I knew we were going to a Spanish-speaking country. I knew I didn't know Spanish, and it would probably be required to effectively fulfill my calling. And so I was stunned.
We had all of our children. All of our children who lived close were in the room with us, our little study, and we had others on Skype and on phone. And so they were almost all involved right there with us, too.
For those who are thinking about going on a mission, how much time do you have to prepare? What is the process of leaving family and friends and your home and leaving on a mission? What is the process involved?
Well, as far as the financial side of things, I didn't have any businesses or anything like this that we had to square away. I was retired, and so these things were fine. The only thing was the house, and maybe Linda can tell you how she arranged to have the house cared for.
I think people are concerned about that. We're talking with people who perhaps are thinking of serving a mission. That's always a worry, the house. How did you handle that, Sister Benson?
It was kind of a neat experience because, as I said, I still wasn't convinced I wanted to go even. And I emailed my cousins and asked them if there were any of their children who would be going to BYU who might be interested in living in our home. And the very next day I got a call from the daughter of one of my cousins who said, we would love to stay in your home. As soon as that happened, I felt like this was right. It was the right time. So to me, it was the answer to my questions. When we actually did, right after that, start the process, we put that we were available right after Christmas, and we made, you have to make doctor's appointments and dental appointments, everything, you know, get your immunizations. It took longer than we thought. I would suggest starting the process a little earlier than you think you might want to go, especially if you're a little bit older and, you know, you discover things that maybe you didn't know about. And so when we finally got our call, it was in January, and then we weren't going until the end of March, so...
So you had a couple of months to, after the call came,
3 months, yeah.
to be prepared and to get ready to go.
After we had decided to go, 2 months after the call came.
Try to cram Spanish down me. Yeah. Now, we were fortunate that Linda got her degree at BYU in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
40 years ago.
But I had never really spoken it or listened to it.
But,
I could read really well.
Yeah, she reads well, and her grammar was excellent, and so that was a blessing to us.
First impressions in Chile. You touch down the first day. Someone pick you up, someone from the mission. What happens there?
The area secretary and his wife. Executive secretary. And they came, picked us up, and they got us some, showed us where to get some food. They helped us get established. Apartment was already waiting for us that the people had before us. And so we were able to not have to look for an apartment. Everything was arranged, furniture. Everything was there for us. And these senior missionaries helped. And then we had the Snows that lived in the same building with us. And they just took us under their wing and showed us a lot of the ropes of what we needed to do.
Nice to have someone to help. Now, I've had somebody ask, and I haven't asked this question before. The apartment is something that you pay for or the church pays for? This is part of your expenses to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And your food and everything else while you're there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How were the living conditions compared to what you were used to? Was it a little primitive? Was it very nice, Sister Benson? What did you find?
Well, our apartment was, of course, very small, but that's one of the first things I learned was that we have too much stuff here in the United States. We just don't need all we have. And we had adequate. The food was good. You couldn't get everything that we could get in the United States. I missed things like brown sugar. but the fruit is excellent. The fresh vegetables, that's all we lived on. Yeah. The one thing that we really, really missed is central heat because it's most people do not have it. And we were very, very cold in our apartment in the winter. We had a little gas estufa stove that we would move around wherever we were. We'd close the doors where we weren't. And yeah, one night Larry said he was going to bed early, and I said, good night. And the next thing I knew, he had his hat and coat on. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I have to say my prayers.
Interesting.
But one of the things that with regard to food and so forth, we lived in one of the better parts of Santiago.
Yeah.
And there was a university just across the street. A block and a half away was our church's, quote, Temple Square, the temple, the chapel, the church office building, MTC and distribution, all those Temple Square sort of things there. And within walking distance or a short metro ride, and the metros are just excellent down there in the bus system, you could get almost anything you'd want.
Let's talk about your assignments there. We mentioned that you had two assignments. Is that correct?
Actually, three. We went down to the welfare office. That was our original calling. And we went into the office, and we spent some time there getting acquainted with the projects that were already in process, projects that we might get interested in. The Browns before us there had just left excellent records and a manual for us and all of this information. And so we spent a lot of time right at first, of course, just going through all that and seeing where we were and what was done, what needed to be done. And then we got to a certain point, realizing we needed to go out and visit with community authorities, school principals, hospital administrators, and all of these people. And we came up to kind of against a wall. And I'll let Linda explain to you what we decided to do, because we weren't able to do what we were called to do.
So this was your first big challenge.
Because of the language, right. Okay. We couldn't communicate with these people like we needed to. And it was especially hard for me, even though, well, when we first got there, I couldn't understand anything. The Chileans speak really fast, and they drop the endings of their words. But it was especially hard on the phone. I had a hard time understanding people. And I was communicating some, but we just couldn't. So we went to talk to the area presidency and explained our situation to them. And there were some other things changing in the welfare department in the area. And so they actually assigned another brother, a Chilean, who had lived in the United States and spoke English perfectly well, to work with us. So we became a team, the three of us. And since he was going to be there taking part of the workload, they assigned us to work 2 days a week in the East Santiago, Chile Santiago East Mission office, and two shifts a week at the temple. And Larry ended up working another shift, too, on his P-Day.
What did you do in the office? What kind of experiences did you have there?
You know, my responsibilities right off were to help prepare the computers, the units.
In the
welfare office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the welfare office, we had in our warehouse many used computers, monitors, some printers, and other electronic equipment that had been turned in from the units throughout Chile, from the church units. And so one of my first responsibilities was to check all these out to see if they were workable so that we could give them to the schools, the hospitals, and donate them to these areas. That was one of the main things that I did. And then I also helped with the reporting of the bishop's storehouse. We'd send out a report to the state presidents. And so I worked with Brother Pereira, who was our supervisor, in getting those reports out. That was the main thing at first.
We'll get to the devastating earthquake a little bit later on. I know it must be heartbreaking for you to see the news of that happening after. I assume you were home by that time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it would appear that we were... in most cases, ready for the earthquake. There are a lot of things that have taken place as far as storehouses, and were you able to be involved somehow in that, in foods and materials for the Chileans?
We didn't do a lot with the storehouses. We did visit them and see what was there. And I did the reports once a month that were sent to all the bishops and state presidents. The storehouses in Chile are not anything like the storehouses in the United States. There's no fresh foods. The only thing they have is the wheat, flour, a little bit of powdered milk,
rice. About 15 items, wasn't it, or so?
Yeah, it's...
So the storehouses were marginal then at best. Maybe the word not marginal,
no,
but they were functional at
right,
best.
Right, and they're able to get a lot of what they had. They just don't have a lot compared to what we do here in the United States.
Did you ever have a fear of earthquake? Did they ever talk about the potential of an earthquake in the country while you were there? Was it something that they were aware of?
We experienced a lot of them.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we experienced small ones that would wake you in the night and shake your bed.
Or I'd be typing on the computer and it would be shaking so bad I had to stop for a while. But they didn't last.
Things falling off of shelves or something.
Yeah. Our boss upstairs above us had moved offices and had his boxes stacked, and they all fell over. But they only lasted 15 seconds maybe compared to the almost 3 minutes during that really devastating earthquake.
So this was not an uncommon occurrence happening.
No, they have them all the time there.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Larry and Linda Benson, who served in Santiago, Chile, as humanitarian area welfare specialists, a block away from the Chilean Temple Square, as you call it. Tell us a little bit about the church there and how the people feel, maybe non-members feel about the church, the impressions that you got.
Well, I guess the impressions we saw would be those that we, as we experienced the closing ceremonies, if you will, of the projects that we had. And we were able to go there and to a school, and where we may have donated computers, where we may have built them stoves for their classrooms because they had no heat. The children would have to bring wood to these little stoves that we'd built for them each day to have heat, or build them a playground, or refurbish their library, things like this. And so each time we'd have a project like this, we would have a closing ceremony. And sometimes our public affairs people would be there, and they could might interview somebody. They would have...
They also always had government people, if they could, like the mayor of the city or important
person. Our state president might be with us, and one state president... why don't you tell about what... Brother Reyes did that time when we went to a ceremony.
Well, he took wrapped copies of the Book of Mormon and also the Liahona and explained a little bit. They always ask about us, and they ask about us, especially as North Americans, you know, why we're there and what we're doing, and so it's explained that we're there serving with our own money and.
And they'd always give Brother Pereira some time to say something. And so that he would talk about missionary work and about the church a bit. And so those are the places where we were able to see their response. And
they were very grateful, so grateful. There was one school that had the teachers had no desks. They had nothing to put anything on. The kindergarten children had no chairs to sit on. We gave them...
No filing cabinets?
Right. We gave them stoves. We gave them books for their library, hundreds of books. They had maybe two little shelves before. They're just so thankful for what they have.
Now, I'm getting a feel maybe we're talking in on the outside or out in the country, but is this right in the city itself?
No, this is in Santiago. The one I'm talking about that we just did the most for was right in Santiago. But it's in one of the poorer areas. You know, there are, just like any city, there are areas that are more affluent, and then there are areas that... And Santiago is a city of 6 million people, so there are way more poor areas than there are affluent areas.
Did you find yourself at on Sundays in sacrament meeting? I would assume there's a chapel adjacent to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try to see other areas of the country on a Sunday, or were you... limited mostly to Santiago?
We went to San Jose de Maipo a couple of times, which is a little branch down in the very southeast corner of Santiago, almost to the the Andes Mountains.
but we weren't assigned a branch.
No.
Linda's talent with music, even in the one there by the temple, they needed her all the time in three or four organizations. Sacrament meeting and just to accompany.
So you play the organ every Sunday then?
Well, piano. The church in Chile does not own an organ, even in the temple. They have keyboards. They can make them sound like organs, but they don't have the pedals or anything. They're not
organs. You're talking about it cold, and I have an impression of Chile always being nice and
outside,
moderate and warm.
It's wonderful outside, mm-hmm. It never got hotter than in the low 90s, maybe usually in the 80s. And in the winter, it froze. There was frost one morning that mm-hmm. we were there two winters. but inside it's cold, not outside.
It's so beautiful. Such a variety of flowers and the trees lining the streets. It's just one beautiful place.
So it is the temple area in a, I would assume, because that's what we do, that the church has built the temple and the stake center there in a nicer area of Santiago.
Yes.
How far do you have to go to find some of the fringes? Is it close by? Could you walk to an area that's not quite as nice from where you were?
We could, yes. In fact, we have walked when we had to go to the International Police Station to get our IDs or something. That's in one of the harder areas in the North Mission.
So you're really surrounded then by...
Yeah, you could leave your comuna, go to the next comuna, and you could be in a entirely
different...
On the projects that you were involved in, tell us about the one or two that just touched you the most, where you really got to feel that they appreciate this, they really need this, and you felt good about being able to provide this for them.
Tell me about your hospital.
Okay. I guess that's one of the things that's just really touched me the most was the need and seeing the joy that came into people's lives when you helped them. One time we bought an ultrasound machine for a hospital. And of course, every time you take something like that and we'd haul it down there and you'd take it in, and of course it's still boxed up, it's not put together in this case because it was brand new. And same with much of the other medical equipment that we provided. But we went into this doctor's office. He was the head of the hospital, and it's an older hospital. They're going to get a new one, but it's a very old hospital. And we were fairly close to the emergency room. And so he goes into the office there. He takes that out. He knows just how to put it together. He puts this ultrasound machine together. And then as soon as he gets it together, we've got a bunch of nurses and everybody around us, and he just smiles. He's like a kid at Christmas. There's a big smile on his face all the time, and he wheels that thing down the hall over to the emergency room, and they've got this man on a gurney, and he gets that thing out, and he examines that man right there, because up to that point, they had no ultrasound in the emergency room. And so he examines that man, finds out, I think he had gallstones. Mm-hmm. He would have had to wait 2 or 3 days for an appointment, even find out what was wrong with him. And so here's this man, knowing immediately, and these doctors having that opportunity. And then this similar situation with the, tell about the maternity, the women.
Yeah, and there's another hospital that we gave bought an ultrasound machine for them too. They have, I think it was 350 women on a waiting list, waiting because they only had one and they just needed more.
What kind of a process is involved to apply to the church for ultrasound? Does it take a long time? How do you show a need? What is the paperwork that is involved?
When we contact somebody, we find out what their needs are, and they have to give us a written request for it. We can't just say, oh, somebody needs something, we'll go ahead and do it. When we get that request from them, then I would fill out a report, a request form. It comes from the church. And then we take that to the area authority presidency, the area presidency, and they either approve it or not approve it, or sometimes they will qualify the request. And then we send, if it's approved, we send a request to the acquisitions department in the area office, and they're the ones that are in charge of purchasing. And then when it gets back, we arrange for it to be delivered, usually
by ourselves. Now, that was within the $15,000.
Right. We have a $15,000 limit that we can do on our own without... the major projects are more than that, but that has to be sent to the church headquarters.
How long from start to finish on something like that, probably?
It all depends.
It can be really fast, but sometimes we would have to call and kind of nudge the acquisitions people along or the finance people.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were responsible for helping to get a lot of medical equipment in into the country, into hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
One of the things that we got was it was for paramedics, and they had experiences when, for example, a bus turned over and a little girl was trapped underneath with her mother, and the mother died, but then they couldn't get the little girl out, and so they had to wait 45 minutes for the machine that lifts, that's air compression.
It's like a balloon that you can put underneath there and
it lifts
and raise it up off from
and
her.
So that's one of the things they were requesting. They also were requesting a defibrillator and, you know, to start heart and things. We had to order that from Germany, and it took a long time. It didn't even get there until after we were gone. But, usually things come from somewhere. A lot of times we can get them right in the country. Sometimes they have to come.
But I really admired the medical people down there. There were so many areas where in the evenings the doctors would give their services to some of these little areas. These paramedics, they worked at different hospitals around, and they would come in.
They took their day off. They each took one day a week to come and serve in this community that didn't have anything. And they all worked in other places, other hospitals.
So much volunteer work like that down there.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Chileans are wonderful.
So the people really do love each other in the country.
Yes,
Chileans are
very loving.
Very loving people. How did you, I'm sure you befriended a lot of people. Were there some special people in your lives, some special natives there who helped you or who you became close with? Any stories of those type of experiences?
Well, I think the supervisor that was given to us was a blessing, being bilingual like he was. And, I don't know.
For me, it was my piano students. I taught keyboard, and I got really close to some of my students, both adults and children. I didn't have very many children, but again, they're so grateful. They just, I taught people from all over, and they don't have music. They don't have anyone who plays. They don't even have keyboards in some of the buildings, and for sure they only have one, and they were so grateful to have the music. The other person that I was close to was one of the guards in our building, because when he was there working late and I came back to our apartment, sometimes I would go down and just talk to him just to practice my Spanish. I told him he was my hijo amigo, my son friend, because he was the same age as one of my daughters. And he really, really helped me learn Spanish.
And they were very patient. Very patient in the temple when we worked there. They knew I couldn't understand a lot of time. They'd take me by the hand and take me over to the station they wanted me to be on and so forth. And that way they were very, very understanding.
And then, we got close to our choir director and her husband. She took piano from me too.
And the other senior couples, the support group down there where we were, was just fabulous.
Tell me about some of the other experiences that you had, other than medical and the computers. Were there other things that you helped provide for them? Are there water projects going on in the country? Is that not a need?
There was one before we came. There isn't now. It was down in Biobío. In fact, it was one of the earthquake areas. The Machu Picchu Indians had no water in two of their communities, and they did a water project. That was before we came. I finished it, had it closed.
I think some of the materials that we received, as you know, when President Holland went down, they did some reorganizing and some consolidating of things. And so a lot of our work was donation. A lot of this furniture she talked about and stoles and stufas. And, we went to rest homes. One of them was a rest home for the elderly, and We completely refurbished their bedrooms, some of them, new beds and blankets and all of this sort of stuff. And they only had about, what was it, one little estufa, one little heaters in their area there for the older ladies and people there. And so we would take the stoves that had been used in those churches that had been closed and that were just in storage, and we'd give them to places like that. Oh, and that the washing machine. Oh, I mean the stove.
The stove, and there's one. It's a place for where they've taken men that would live on the street if they didn't have a place to live. They're not necessarily old folks or anything, but just homeless men, and there were 24 of them. And the first project that was done for them was to give them woodworking equipment so that they got. They would take wood and they would cut it to make a handle, like a broom handle. And then they got donations from a sock factory. They got the ends of socks and they would make mops and sell them. And they were actually quite colorful, and it was good because these men were able to help earn something that would give them, you know, the help to support themselves. So it was a pride type thing. And then when we were there later, they had a kitchen that was probably as big as this desk, and the stove in it was teeny, about 2 foot square probably, had four burners on them, but only one of them worked. And so they were trying to cook for 24 men on this one little tiny burner. And we bought a new stove for them, a big stove with
commercial level,
commercial type stove. That was kind of a neat experience too, because we picked one out and then we decided, well, we should let them decide what they want. So we told them to do some research and find what they needed, and it turned out that they picked the exact same stove that we had picked, and they were very happy when we brought that.
You have to come home from this feeling great joy and great satisfaction of what you've been able to accomplish and the lives you've changed and the people you've helped.
Definitely. I think, you know, I had a testimony, and I have a testimony of the gospel. I know it's true and all. I'm not sure my testimony got strengthened all that much because we weren't doing missionary work. But, boy, did my appreciation for what I have, my love for my fellow man, and the desire that we have to contribute better to fast offering, to contribute better to the humanitarian fund and these things where we know we'll get used properly and helping people like this, so that the funds are available when these projects do come into the church. That's what I think really touched me.
My testimony, I had a strong testimony before, but one thing that I just saw over and over again was in each of the areas we worked, was the fact that this is the Lord's work, and He is in charge of what's going on. I had experiences in each of those areas that really were a testimony to me of that.
Let's touch on the earthquake just for a moment before we wrap this up. You hear of the earthquake. What is the first thing that goes through your mind? What are you thinking of?
I guess the first thing that went through my mind was I remember seeing these little houses that weren't, you know, loose, the brick or whatever, that I knew wouldn't sustain an earthquake. And I thought about the people, thought about those people that were already struggling to, when things were good, to keep food on the table and so forth. Now here they have nothing. And my heart went out to them. I just wanted to pack up my truck and haul it down, something down to them. We'd seen so many of them, even in the good times.
The church is working so hard now to try to build that country back up again, but I'm sure you can tell it's going to be years before that happens. Have you been in contact with anyone since you've been back? Have any stories of what's going on now?
been in contact with quite a few. I get emails from some, and the guard that I mentioned that I was close to, his family was actually on the beach right where, and I was so worried and didn't hear from him for a week, and finally got a Facebook message. He said, when the earthquake, we were on the beach when the earthquake happened. We ran like crazy, and we're okay. One of the brother of one of my friends, one of my students, lived in Talcahuano, which was devastated by the earthquake. And when they finally got in touch with him, he said, "What the earthquake didn't destroy, the tsunami destroyed, the waves that came in after." He said, "I don't know how long we'll be able to survive on the resources that we have." But when she and another member of her family were able to go down there, finally go down, they couldn't go down at first because of the roads. The authorities said, no, don't come because you can't get through. When they were finally able to make it down, they wanted to bring his family back to Santiago. And they said, no, we're going to stay. We'll make it somehow. The people are so resilient and independent and they help one another.
People listening to this program right now, perhaps there are some fence setters, those who are thinking, should I or shouldn't I go on a mission? What would you tell them?
I'll tell them that your family is blessed. And our blessing from the state president as we left, he promised that, and it happened.
Literally.
It literally happened, especially with a couple of children.
And it was a life-changing experience for us, too. I'm so grateful for being able to learn another culture, get strengthened in another language, and we'll go again sometime.
Nice to have you here. Thank you very much for sharing your testimony and your time and your effort for the people of Chile. You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we've been visiting with Larry and Linda Benson, who served in Santiago, Chile, as humanitarian area welfare specialists.